Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John. So good to be with everybody tonight. We've got an action-packed show. We've got Eric Dion, who is the head of Eastern Exotics and does a lot of other very interesting things. We've got our co-host tonight, Papa Stro Maestro. Hey, Papa Stro, how you doing?
Yeah, great to be here.
Good, good. Are you all ready for your match with the Barbarian this coming weekend in Kingston? In Kinston, I'm sorry. Are you all ready for that?
The question is he going to be ready? Because I'm going to put a whooping on him that Clark can't wash off.
All right, well, I tell you what.
Believe
I'll
that.
Show, I'll be there, so I'll bring a bottle of Clorox, okay?
Oh, you won't need a Clorox.
Okay.
I'm blinging plenty of pain, trust me.
Okay, well,
anybody
that's
else
great.
That gets
well,
in my way. Anybody gets in my way Saturday night, if they want some, come and get it.
I'll be on the front row with my camera. I'll get some of that, okay?
Good.
All right. So anyway, that's what I've got this week, and I think you've got the same thing. Is that great series of wrestling matches in Kinston, North Carolina? Tell us where they are and what time, so that everybody knows how to be there.
Bell time. I think it's 7 Salvation Army Building in Kinston, North Carolina. High Volume Pro Wrestling. Just look up High Volume Pro Wrestling. Type in the search on Facebook and see the page, and it'll tell all about what's going on, the lineup and everything.
Well, that sounds great. Well, we will be there and looking forward to it. Well, tonight, first off, we have Eric Dion, who is with us from Eastern Exotics. He's the one that brings all the great snakes and all the crazy animals to the Comic-Cons. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing good. Glad to be here on the show, of course. And I was honored that you guys asked me to come on.
Well, it's good to have you on. The last time we saw you, we were at in Jacksonville celebrating Papa Stro's win as the U.S. Heavyweight Champion at GXW Wrestling. And then before that, we saw you at the Cape Fear Halloween Comic-Con. So first of all, I know everybody's interested in your animals. Tell us a little bit about Eastern Exotics, how you got it started, and who all you have. Because in my opinion, animals are people too. So tell us all about the cool people you have at Eastern Exotics.
Well, the basis of it was, you know, I went to the University of Southern Mississippi, and I got my degree in environmental science. So with that, I've always had a passion for the environment and animals. And then about a year ago, I decided, you know, I wanted to go a step further and start rescuing all these displaced animals that were around Eastern North Carolina. So, I guess without really talking to the wife, it was like, I brought a snake home, and one snake turned into three snakes turned into 7 snakes. And now that 7 snakes have turned into, we have 54 snakes, 15 lizards, a more or less crocodile, and, 5 rabbits, 3 German shepherds, 2 cats, a bird. No, 2 birds. Let me tell you. Yeah, 2 birds and a rat. So, and you know, they're all unique. They're all different. Some of them are rescues. Some of them are project breeds that I've picked up. The most notorious ones that we bring, and I say notorious just because they're more well known than I am once they get out there. We have Julius, who is a 12.5-foot Burmese python. And we have Jabba, who is our black and white Argentine tegu, and he's about 4.5 feet long. And then I have a couple other ones, but those are the 2 big eye catchers, along with a friend of mine, Jason. He has Myrtle, which is a more or less crocodile, and since I last saw you guys, I picked up my own Moralette's crocodile. So I have a baby crocodile. And actually, I'm supposed to make a decision here in the next 3 days. I may be picking up a 5.5-foot Moralette's crocodile, as well as a 4-foot black caiman, which is another crocodilian species. So who knows at the next Comic-Con, actually, you know, there's the one in August that you'll be at and hosting, that I may have a whole new selection of reptiles and snakes to bring down and show out.
All right, now, how do you make a decision about a 5-foot crocodile? Where do you keep a 5-foot crocodile?
Well, that's where the decision's going to come into play. The decision is, can I get it past the wife? And if so, I need to have all my cards in a row. So it's a matter of, I have tomorrow off, and if I can get an enclosure built in my backyard to be able to house a 5.5-foot crocodile.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of hard to get a 5.5-foot crocodile past your wife in the house, isn't it?
Oh yeah. It's, I brought it up to her and she kind of looked at me and gave me the whole hell no thing. And I was just like, but if I have somewhere to put it, and she was like, well, if you have somewhere that it's going to go, then yeah, that's not a problem. And I was like, okay. And so now that's where the burden comes down on me, is getting everything situated and saying, okay, look, boom, I have this done. And then just coming home and being like, hey, look, babe, look what's in the back of the truck. And then her being like, where's that going to go? And I'd be like, aha, see? And there it is. So, yeah.
Right. Well, I know that, okay, Myrtle is, how big is Myrtle? About 2.5, 3 feet?
Yeah, but Myrtle was about, yeah, it's about 2.5, maybe 3 feet. It's hard, you know, I haven't been there to measure her out, but I do believe the last time she was measured, she was just between that 2.5, 3 foot mark.
Right. But now, Papa Stroh, didn't you bonded a little bit with Myrtle down there in Wilmington, didn't you?
Oh, Myrtle's awesome. She's I love Myrtle to death. She even gave me a few smiles.
yeah, that's cool. So I guess, now, Papa Stroh, you're the one that I would ask. I guess Myrtle had a nice, gentle disposition, right?
Oh, yeah, very friendly. You know, she looked at a few others like, I felt tummy rumble a few times when she got hungry, but other than that, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, now, Eric, how's your 5.5-foot? Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy, and the disposition is hit and miss right now. I actually know somebody who used to own him about 15 years ago, and they actually lost part of their thumb to him. And then I've heard some other stories from some other people that have had him in the past, where they're like, yeah, his disposition, he's just mean as hell. And, you know, but it's, any animal is going to be like that. You can have a dog, it can be the greatest dog in the world, and he's just going to have a bad day one day. So, you know, with all the animals that we have, whether it's from the tiniest snake, rat, mouse, you name it, they're all prone to have their bad days. They're prone to bite. It's just one of those things they can have. But if you learn to tell the signs and educate people, then other people will be able to tell the signs. And of course, when we bring them out to the shows, I don't bring all my animals out, of course. I wish I could, but usually of that day, I can go through and say, okay, you're in a good mood, you're in a good mood, you're in a nasty mood, you're not going. So it's basically like having kids again. It's, you know, you're grounding your kids. Nope, you're not going today, you're misbehaving. And, you know, but we pick them up, and, of course, you've seen firsthand at the cons. The crowd gets into it, and I even get people who are deathly afraid of stuff. By the end of the day, I can usually have them over there taking a picture holding one of these animals.
That's exactly right. I can say firsthand, and it was really awesome watching you and the animals, and the people that were afraid, once they found out that they weren't going to get bitten, well, it was all right.
Yeah.
There's Yeah, there's just a certain attraction people have. If as long as they're not threatened, people can like learn to like a lot of different kinds of animals and people too. I'll say that one.
Oh yeah, it's like, and I think actually there at the Cape Fear Comic Con for Halloween, we had this older lady, and I say older because she was I think 84, and an older black lady. She was the sweetest thing in the world. And she'd never been around a snake. She couldn't stand them or anything. And by the end of the day, between talking to her, we had actually got to where we had Big Girl out there, which she is the 15-foot albino Burmese python that weighed about 135, 140 pounds. And we got it to where she was holding this big snake over her shoulders and took a picture, and her daughter was next to her like, no. And that grandmother looked over there to her daughter and then to her granddaughter and was like, you only live once, and I've never would have done this before, but after learning everything I have, I'm glad I did. And, you know, they're life experiences. And that's one of the biggest goals and probably my main mission statement within Eastern Exotics, besides the care of the animals, is educating society about all the misconceptions that we've all grown up with about exotic animals, especially the snakes and the crocodilians.
Misconceptions is a great word. I think sometimes we just don't think, and that's the foundation.
Isn't that
of
the truth? I think a lot of people have that problem.
Yeah, I
that's why Myrtle's so smarter than we are.
Yeah, Yeah, it's like it's like Jabba, the black and white Argentine tegu. Their intelligence level and their IQ level is off the chart. Jabba recognizes me as his owner. I can put him on the couch and I can call his name and he'll come over to me. He'll climb up on my shoulders. He'll lay across my back, put himself underneath everything. He's just smart. And you can take them out. You can put them on a leash. You can walk them around if you want. Over at the Comic-Con, there's a period of time, I'll just sit them on the table and be like, okay, stay. And he'll sit there for a good 20, 25 minutes and not even move. And then he gets restless and he's like, okay, I got to do something, Dad.
You're kidding. That's great now. Have you ever tried to see if he can recognize certain words? Well, I guess he does recognize verbal commands like stay.
Yeah, he'll recognize stay now, and he recognizes his name. And so I can literally, like I said, I can sit there and have him on the couch. I can put him on the couch, and I can have my daughter or wife sit there, and I can call him, but then they will turn around and call his name, and he'll go towards them as well.
I'm just stunned. This is great to hear. I'm a big dog fan. I know Papa Stro is too, but it's great to know that other animals can learn to be pets and learn to be part of the family. Would that be the best way to say it, Eric?
Yeah, that's pretty much hitting the nail on the head when it comes down to it, because I do consider all the animals I have my family. I had a good friend of mine who flew in from Kansas City last night, John Donnelly, and he came in, and it was the first time he'd seen the animals, and he was just looking at them like, really? And then, of course, there's Julius, you know, in my living room, 12.5-foot Burmese, and he's just like, well, what if he gets out? And I said, well, if he gets out, that's my fault, but he's not going to do anything. And, you know, and that's the biggest conception. I don't keep poisonous snakes around because they're a little too unpredictable. Plus, I have an 11-year-old son in the house, and I don't want anything ever to jeopardize that. But, you know, just like with like your cats and your dogs, you know, they have their temperaments, and you just have to learn to read them, and you have to learn what their body language is. Just like with humans, we have to learn what society and everybody else's body language is when we're around somebody. You can tell when somebody's upset. You can tell when they're in a bad mood. You can tell when they're happy. And animals, they have same telltale signs. You just have to learn to read them.
Okay, that's a great lesson for dealing with animals, and humans. You just have to learn how to read them, and just hope for the best when you know it's not going to be good. All right. Well, that's been very illuminating. Now, when you sent me a bio about you, there's a lot of paranormal investigation in there. And
yes,
I was. We had talked about that briefly at the Halloween Comic Con, but tell us a little bit about that. I know Papa Stroh has done some. I've done some. Tell us a little bit about your background in the paranormal.
So, about 15 years ago, I got into paranormal investigating. I started with a team that was in Eastern North Carolina. And after about 2 years of really not doing much, me and Jess sat down and decided on Valentine's Day that we were going to start our own group. So this coming Valentine's Day marks 11 years since we started SEPIA, which is Southeast Paranormal Investigators Association. And we literally hit the ground running, and we decided that our group was going to be different from others out there. We had the team. We have a whole interview process. It usually takes about 2 weeks. You go through a written interview and then two interviews after that in person, and then you meet the team, and then after that you decide whether you're brought on. Well, with that, we made sure to diversify. So we have skeptics, we have believers, we have Catholic, we have Buddhist, we have atheists. You know, we are a very diverse team because in the unknown realm, you have to look at it from every angle. Most people consider the paranormal a pseudoscience. And, you know, it's up for debate. But if you're closed-minded going on to it, you know, you can't come to a proper conclusion with stuff. So we built SEPIA up, and within our first year, we were all over the place. We went up to Pennsylvania, we went to West Virginia, Florida, Georgia, all of North Carolina, and we built this rapport up within the paranormal community. Then we started a radio show that we had for about 7-8 years. We started off with a radio network called Beast Radio, and then we went to Para-X, and we were there for many years. And then it got to the point where we started our own radio network, the SEPIA Radio Network, and we did that where we had 33 shows on throughout the week. And then finally, life caught up to me and had to take a step back. So we stopped doing the radio show, but we've never given up with SEPIA. And 80-85% of our cases are residential cases. We get the phone call. We get the email. Just this week alone, I've gotten 4 phone calls for residential cases. And the other 20-15% are your historic sites or our paranormal vacations, as we like to call them, because, you know, they're fun to do and it's always good to see what you can find out. But within that time, we've done so many cases and we've had so many doors open up. You know, we've done TV appearances, different series, and branched off. And my specialty has always been cryptozoology. And that's what caused me to found ICE, which was the International Cryptozoology Establishment, because I've been studying monsters and mythology, Native American lore, Greek mythology, you name it, since I was about 7 years old, because my grandmother used to threaten me that if I didn't act right, she was going to call the Jersey Devil to come out and get me. And when you're 7 years old and you hear something like the Jersey Devil, you're like, whoa, what is that? And you know, it was, you know, so it sparked my interest, and literally I credit my grandmother, who was from up there in Manahawkins, New Jersey, for getting me on this path of the unknown and the paranormal.
Have you ever seen the New Jersey Pine Barrens?
I've been through it. I was about 15, and that's one of my gold star spots, as I put it, that I would like to get there and investigate it and take my team out there to literally, I want to take a week and just camp out in the middle of the Pine Barrens for a week and see what I can come up with and find and do all this research and interviews.
That place is scary, and it just does not look right, does it?
No, it doesn't. At least from what I remember, it doesn't look right. Because like I said, that was when I was 15, and of course I'm a little older than that now. So,
yeah, I lived up there when I was working doing some real estate development. I was in Vineland, New Jersey, which is the largest city in that south portion of New Jersey. And I drove by the Pine Barrens when I was on the interstate all the time. I wouldn't do it at night. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't want any part of that. Pine Barrens are pretty frightening. Well, I tell you what, before we go any farther, I want to ask you a $250,000 question. And Papa Stroh, I know
right.
that you and I have talked about doing some paranormal investigation. Eric, could we talk over the next couple of weeks and find a time where some of you and your members and Papa Stroh and I, we could all get together and go out and investigate something?
Yeah, actually, that's very feasible, and I know I wouldn't have a problem with it, and I know Jess wouldn't have a problem with it, as well as the team. And I got a couple of spots that actually would be really good that I could get in. I just have to get it set up. Here in Jacksonville, North Carolina, we have the USO, which is uh-huh. actually on record. It's the oldest continuous working USO in the world. And Debbie over there who runs it, we've gone in there before. And we've come up and come back with some interesting evidence to begin with. And she's been asking about us coming back and doing another thing down there. And so that could be a really big possibility. Or who knows, maybe we can get something set up down there in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah, Papa Stroh, does that sound like something we might can try to work out in the next month or so?
That sounds great.
Yeah, I think it would be a lot of fun. And then especially as we're starting to look at conspiracy theories, I'm going to take a little bit of a different view on what we're doing, and it might be surprisingly pro psychic investigation. I think the more that I see, the more that I find out that maybe mainstream science really wants to ignore some of this. So that's just, you know, a little bit about what I think. But so now it looks like, and from what you sent me, you folks have been on the Sci-Fi Channel, Discovery Canada, Discovery US, Sky Atlantic. When was your last appearance on one of these networks? I'd be interested to know that.
Let's see, the last major project that I did when it comes down to the paranormal and cryptozoology stuff was for Discovery Canada and the film company Cineflix. And that was William Shatner's Weird or What. I did the episode for their sea monsters as their cryptozoologist. So that was the last one I did, and that was, we did a remake of it in 2013. I'm currently, four weeks ago, signed on with Earth Touch Productions out of New York, and I can't say too much on it because they do have a gag order out there for it, but we're in discussions and pre-production of two show theories. One is a paranormal-based show, and the other one is a cryptozoology/survivor-type show. So those are what's in the works right now. Last year, I decided to take an entire year off of interviews and filming and all that stuff just to get life back on track. And, you know, but like you had said, I've been fortunate enough. You know, I've done Shatner's Weird or What. We did an episode for season one of Haunted Collector with John Zaffis, who's a good friend I've known for many, many years. Caught a little heat for it, but, you know, production is production. They twist things around every now and then. And then I had my golden opportunity that we took was Sky Atlantic and Knickerbocker Glory Productions contacted us out of England. And they're like, you and your family are a little different, and we're doing a show concept called Twin Towns. And the concept was basically, if you took wife swap, but instead of just swapping the wife, you swapped the entire family out. And so what they did was they took my family, me, my son, my daughter, my wife, flew us to England, and took a family from England and flew them here to Jacksonville. And they lived in our house and did our jobs for a week. And we did their jobs for a week, lived in their house. My kids went to their school, their schools, and then their kids went to our schools. At the time, I owned a comic book shop and did the paranormal investigations and my radio show still. And even they had the guy going out in the middle of the woods down there in Cape Fear looking for the elusive Cape Fear River monster. And we got the chance to go in and investigate the Cusworth house, which is one of seven of England's, I guess they're four rated historic sites. So it was built in like the 1700s. And they welcomed us with open arms, provided us with everything we needed there, equipment-wise, and basically turned us loose and said, hey, here you go, go investigate it. We took some of the locals with us. We had a historian from there. And it was just like, it was probably one of the most memorable moments. Makes me miss England, like, every day, you know, because I didn't know these people going in, and still to this day, some of the people I met there are, I consider some of the best friends that I have.
I feel the same way about friends I made in England the couple of times that I was there. Tell you what, Papa Stroh, have you ever heard of the Cape Fear River Monster? I haven't.
I've heard rumors about the Cape Fear River Monster. Honestly, I've yet to see it, but yeah, I've heard stories.
All right, Eric, you know what the next question is. Please tell us about it.
So the Cape Fear Lizard Monster, or River Monster, is one of those legends that populated actually in the late 1980s. And what it stemmed from was Highway 17 from Florida all the way up to Virginia. In the late 80s, you started getting your tabloids and your newspaper articles about the Lizard Man. And,
yes,
you know, you had
yes.
everything from the Lizard Man, you know, had my baby to, you know, I was, you know, stuff happened to people's cars and they were abducted by the Lizard Man and all this. Well, shortly after that died
we
down.
We had Bat Boy, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, Bat Boy. Yep. Yeah, that was, whew. And so after all that kind of died down, it was around 1990-91 time frame. And it didn't get a lot of publicity on a news scale, and I think that's because news and media took a different turn because the internet was just coming out and everything. But local wise, you had people reporting of this reptilian type humanoid that was around the Cape Fear River and along the sides, and they'd see it, and all of a sudden this thing would dive into the water. So it was standing on 2 feet, and next thing it would dive into the water, and it moved like a crocodile or an alligator, and it would just disappear. And you had reports of people saying, oh, my puppy was taken by this thing. It came out of the water, and it, you know, it had all this stuff going on. And it was, you'd get 2 to 3 reports a year from about 1990 to about 2001. Now there's still reports that come in. They're not as many. You might get 1, sometimes 2 in a year now. And then I think the last time I checked, 2013, there was like no reports, and it went for like a year and a half. So, but that's the concept behind that. And it's said to travel here and there from, you know, just all throughout the Cape Fear. I think a guest over at the Hilton Riverside said that they saw something on the battleship from across the windows, and they had binoculars with them because they're here for like a bird watching thing. And they looked, and there's this lizard type creature on the battleship North Carolina, and it dove off into the water. And as they watched it, it was hanging around the Coast Guard station there in downtown Wilmington, like in the water. And they called, and, you know, cops chalked it up to too much partying and too much drinking. And that was in 2015. So, but that's where that whole story emitted from and has come from, and has kind of grown, and it's still lingering there. So,
what do you think? What do you think about that?
My thoughts are construed, because here's the big issue with this whole story that I've gathered. The descriptions are very vague. They're always like, okay, it's humanoid, it's on 2 feet, and it goes into the water. Well, nobody's getting this clear picture, and the people that did have a clear picture are no longer around. And to me, it could be like, I have to view it in an open-minded aspect of it. It could be somebody in a suit, like trying to do a diver type suit and trying to just get something sparked up, kind of like with all the Bigfoot sightings that we had and the people in Georgia that say, oh, I have Bigfoot and he's locked in, you know, I got a frozen Bigfoot and he's in this freezer in my garage. And then, you know, they led the media on for like a year and then come to find out it was just chopped up beef and stuff with hair on it. And, you know, so it's hard to say. I believe, though, there are things out there, especially when it comes to stuff in the water, because according to NOAA standards, we've only explored maybe 7% of the ocean ways and our waterways on Earth. We've explored more space than we have on our own planet. And with that mm-hmm. leaves 93% of the waters on our planet unexplored. You can't tell me, and nobody is going to ever be able to convince me differently, that there's stuff in the water that we have not discovered. And I'm a strong believer that there are things that we have not come across, and there's going to be thousands of different new species and animals that we're going to come across as we dig deeper into these ocean ways and these waterways.
You know, it's funny that we just talked about that, I think, last week. About untapped, places in the ocean that we have yet to know anything about. Didn't we, Dr. John, I think?
Yes, we did, and we talked about the fact that there's a crevice. I can't remember the name of it. It's 7 miles deep. But then I was just reading this week as we were getting ready to do Conspiracy Theories 101, there are certain planets that have crevices 30 and 35 feet deep, and what on Earth is down there in those? And so, yes, in fact, I had read my first report. I know that it's become fairly common. We know what a UFO is. By the way, we have snuck right into Conspiracy Theories 101. We know what a UFO is, unidentified flying object, but then there's something called a USO, or an unidentified submerged object. And
yeah.
that's very interesting to me. So, Eric, I think what you're saying is we might, as we explore more throughout the Earth, we're probably going to see some, you know, more USOs, and perhaps as we become more aware of what's going on. I mean, you know, who knows? And by the way, I've got to introduce my Nightmare. How are
yes.
you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing, John?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on. This is This is Nightmare. He is Jimmy Boogie Woogie Man Valiant's manager. I've known Nightmare for a long, long time. It's great having him on here. We got everybody here, and we have now moved into the area of conspiracy theories, which is, I think, one of the most entertaining areas, and there's a lot going on. I want to say this, and I want to get everybody's opinion on the statement I'm going to make. There's something called a conspiracy theory. I believe we can do one of three things with a conspiracy theory. We can either prove that it is false, or we can prove that it is true. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty scary when you find out that a conspiracy theory turns out to be true. Otherwise, if you can't prove that it's true or false, or you can't really make out enough facts, it will just kind of ease into that area of urban legend. And all right, I'll start with Eric, and I will say, what would you do in terms of the Cape Fear? We're gonna call him Lizard Man. Is that what we call him?
Yeah, they call it the Cape Fear River Monster.
okay, the River Monster, what are we going to have to do to change the River Monster from a conspiracy theory into true, false, or an urban legend? What are we going to have to do?
The biggest thing that's going to have to be done is going to be the research and investigative side of it, of literally getting, you know, permission to go down there and having night cameras or day cameras set up, checking out tracks, checking out the validity of your witnesses that have reported stuff like this. And, you know, a lot of people think that within paranormal investigating or cryptozoology that it's just a cakewalk, but, you know, what everybody sees on TV is, you know, seeing this, oh, it's all done in the night, blah, blah, blah. But what they don't realize is these shows that are on TV, they're taking 3, 4, 5, sometimes 7 days of investigation and putting it all together into a half-hour episode. So there's a lot of work to it, and that's the biggest thing, is getting that footwork in and getting people that can monitor cameras. Because if you have a camera out there, or actually if you have 10 cameras set up and you roll them for 24 hours, now you have 240 hours worth of film that has to go get combed over. And a lot of people walk into that and they're just like, ugh, that's just too tedious. But if you want to find something and you want to prove something or disprove it, you got to put that legwork in. And I think in order to make that a true, false, or conspiracy thing, there's just a lot of legwork that yet to be done and a lot of research that needs to go into it.
There really is. Papa Stroh, I know that you've told me several times that you were on a big investigation at a mental institution. Now, it was obviously a conspiracy theory as to whether or not that thing was really haunted. What did you folks do to prove yes, no, or we really can't determine? It was, what was the name of that place that you were part of that investigation?
It was the Moundsville Penitentiary. It was like right across from the Indian Burial Ground. So I had a lot of activity going on the night we went.
A lot of activity. Now, you folks, did you stay primarily at the penitentiary, or did you go to the Indian Burial Ground area as well?
We went to both, and I stayed up all night, and then we went to the burial ground first, and then we went to the penitentiary, which we were locked down for most of the night.
How pleasant.
A lot of stuff happened. Anything from ghosts kicking dust in the air, being ticked off at us, trying to communicate with them, to seeing bats sleeping upside down in the cells. And hearing clanging in the attic, pretty much, if you will, when we would try to reach out to them. So, yeah, there's a lot of activity going on.
All right, now let me ask you this. When you were there, did you folks record any of that activity?
Oh, yes. We had all the machines, all the equipment, and then, we would get different, sound bites every now and then. And it was just like the one time when the dust kicked in the air was when there was a real loud sound bite, if you will, of anger from one of the ghosts, apparently. And next thing you know, poof, here comes a cloud of dust up in the air. Like there was a certain place that they didn't want us to go in, evidently. So,
okay, now I'm going to ask, I believe, a very reasonable question of you. You get these recordings, you experience them. They showed up on the recordings. Now, Papa Stroh, are ghosts, are spirits / ghosts, are they real? Yes or no?
I saw what I saw.
Okay,
and
you saw what you saw, and based on what you saw, did you experience something out of the ordinary?
It was aside from seeing what all I saw and hearing the recordings and all, and getting these chills and vibes, different places around the penitentiary. It's you can just feel the tension, the of like what
went down like years past, and you know what these ghosts experienced. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, these ghosts are like still like living the past, if you will, living what they went through, all the torture, all the hardship they went through in the penitentiary, and all that. Because I mean, there were people being tortured and killed in this penitentiary, and not to mention the activity going across the street there with Indian burial ground on top of that. So yeah, a lot of unrestful spirits hanging around that place.
So I guess my point is, as a conspiracy theorist examiner, I guess that's what we can call me tonight, you experienced things that were not normal. Had there been nothing going on, you would have said, Dr. John, nothing went on in the burial grounds, and nothing went on in Moundsville Penitentiary. We all sat around bored for 9 hours and left. You didn't say that, did you?
No. I mean, I experienced what I experienced, and, you know, it was pretty much cut and dry. I mean, you know, I mean, anybody going in that were pretty much naysayers came out that night just at all at what, you know, went down. So,
okay, thank you. You've answered my question. Basically, something was experienced, and you're around to report it. And we need to take note of that, because I know that when I did the examination of Grace on Second with Phasma Paranormal about 3 months ago, I mean, things were happening all over, and we couldn't stop it. I mean, I've always been a believer, I guess, and I have been in situations. I've done investigations, but that one was so action-packed. Ghost Radar, the software, was going off all over. We were taking photos. We were getting orbs. There's so much positive investigation relics that obviously something is going on there. Now, Maestro, we've talked to you. We've talked to Eric. Now, Nightmare, I talked to you today. We were talking about UFOs, because I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. And you said, the first thing that you said to me was, Dr. John, I had an experience, but I had friends with me, and they saw it too. That's what you told me, right?
Correct, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that experience that you had.
Just on a quick note, it was me, my nephew, and we had our girlfriends with us. This was back in my teenage days, and we went to hang out in the woods, which happened to be on top of a mountain, and it was getting later in the evening, and we just happened to be kind of, you know, looking up at the stars. That's what you do when you go on a date. Some of the stuff you do when you go on a date.
Okay.
This was at the beginning. This was at the beginning of the date, and happened to be looking up, and I seen a star move across the sky. And I was like, wait a minute. And I didn't say anything to, you know, the other three sitting next to me, you know. No, I'm like, okay, maybe that was just, you know, maybe my eyes moved or something, you know. Something out of the corner of my eye. No. I had focused in on this one particular light, which is, like I said, I thought was a star. It then shot back across the sky. And, you know, looking up into the sky, the only way I could describe it is from Earth and looking up from my parameter, say it moved from right to left 10 feet in front of me. You know what I mean? If it had been in front of me, but it was in space. And I said, that's not right. I said, guys, look. And it was a little brighter than most of the stars. And I had them. I said, right there. Now watch. And it moved again, but this time down in a horizontal and then almost like into it was going to go into a triangle. But they seen it shoot down and stop about another 10 feet of the way I'm trying to explain it. And they were like, yeah, we seen that. And we sat there. And then watched, and it was a few minutes, and then again, it shot back up, like I said, in a triangular. It made like a whole triangle at this point. And we were just like, what in the world is that? That is not, you know, like any aircraft we've ever seen. And then we just seen it kind of starting to fade, like a star fading away, and then it was gone. I mean, like it had shot into space, and it was gone. But that was, I mean, we didn't see any, you know, aliens or, you know, we didn't see it up close. It was just what appeared to be a star, but the way it moved was very irregular. And that's the whole story of that. We got in the car and left because we weren't going to stay there and see what else happened after that in case they seen us.
And I don't blame you. All right, so what I found is tonight, three people that I know, to varying degrees, all three of you have a story. And it seems like all three of you have a story that has multiple witnesses. Anybody wants to say that conspiracy theories aren't true and can't be proven, when you have multiple witnesses, I mean, the law will convict somebody on the basis of multiple witness testimony. Therefore, that makes multiple witness testimony as real as it gets. Well, what we've just talked about tonight, I haven't mentioned mine. I've got probably too many to mention. But the fact is, we have plenty of witnesses that say things happen that are not, quote, usual, that we can't explain. We don't know why they're happening. And that's why, as we focus on conspiracy theories, we want to talk about, is this real or is it not? Multiple witnesses is one way to say, yes, we may as well claim that it's for real. Now, all three of you, I've got a little story, a little yarn that I want to spin. I want to tell you about some research that I've done because I am Dr. John, and I have spent many, many years researching various hypotheses to determine if things are true. I know that at North Carolina State, I researched, do people learn better if they have help with computers and certain things presented on the computer versus just listening to someone in class? I found out, yes, that's true. That was my research question. And so right now, and don't laugh too much, but the research question I've got is the hollow moon theory. That's something that I've seen a good bit about the last couple of weeks as I've been getting ready for Conspiracy Theories 101. And it's like, what do we know about the moon? And what, well, we don't know quite as much as we think we do. One thing that is very interesting is scientists say. Now, I love that phrase, scientists say. Where does that come from? Well, I don't know. It means someone read it somewhere, but was it really spoken by a scientist? Was it really part of some kind of a research program that they did? Well, I don't know. And in Conspiracy Theories 101, what we're going to try to do is we're going to, when someone says, a majority of people say this, I'm going to find out if they really do. I want to find out. And as I've started exploring just on the surface, the hollow moon, I found some very interesting things. First of all, they say that the moon was constructed when a large Mars-sized object hit the Earth. Well, that's great. But why do they say that? Papa Strode, do you know why they say it? You're welcome to say no if you don't.
Well, can you clarify that again, please, about the moon you were saying?
Okay, yeah. Right. They say, I have record of many scientists saying a Mars-sized object hit the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, the moon was created.
So they're saying the moon's in the moon was actually broke off of the Earth.
I guess that's what they say. It sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, you have the same theory about the other dinosaurs too, about like meteor showers and comets coming to the Earth and wiping them out basically at the time. And then we have evidence of craters all over the Earth from meteors.
Okay. That is the first piece of physical evidence you have spoken about. That's about the only that's the only thing that we've got is that, well, yes, if mm-hmm. some people said there were meteors and comets, well, we do have some craters. So thank you for bringing up a concrete thing that we can actually look at and say, okay, I believe that. All right, Nightmare, your turn next. What do you think about that statement that says the Earth was struck by a Mars-sized object and we got the moon? What do you think about that?
Well, not speaking as a scientist, but I do have a theory. I don't like their theory because the moon, you know, of what it's constructed from, its material, yeah, it could be part of what Earth is, but then when you look at other planets that we have in our own planet system, you know, these are, you know, some of them are just gas, but they have moons around them, but the moons that are around them aren't formed up of the material of the actual planet. So, I mean, how were they formed? How were these other moons formed? So, I mean, I'm bringing up a theory about that. So, in order for it to be fact, you know, we would have to go to the moon and say, well, hey, does everything here on the moon look like part of the Earth's crust? Because I believe that's what their theory was, that whatever it was a Mars-like planet that hit our planet, it only took off the crust, is what they said. And if it only took off the crust, then we should be able to see all of those materials on the moon. But I think they found, you know, when they've taken soil samples of the moon, things that aren't from this planet. So that, you know, there is just something to think about.
If you think about that too, with the moon, moon's an awful big piece of structure there. I mean, if it would have broke off the Earth, there would definitely be some place on this planet where there would be a much deeper crevice than the usual craters that we have right now. So,
well, yeah, what other planet or rock? Yeah, now that might be in the soil samples too. So I would, you know, you'd have to research into that too. Whatever hit this planet, part of that, if that is the case. But yeah, if something had hit this planet, there should have been something left here for us to recognize that.
No doubt.
Yeah, but then you got to look at it from the same fact that you can fit 50 of our moons within our Earth.
Oh, yeah.
So it could be, but then, you know, with the way the core of the Earth is, that could fill back up and then harden from the elements and fill part of that hole in. It depends on how long ago it took place. So you have both sides of the story there, too.
And go back to what you were saying. And all this stems to go back to what we were talking about earlier about ocean exploration.
That's it. Yeah, I just thought about that when you were talking about it.
You know what I mean?
There could be parts of the Earth that are missing and that we don't know. The answers are in the oceans, and that's why 93% of this planet is water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there's 93% of the water that we haven't explored yet.
It's all connected.
Based off of.
I'm getting my numbers mixed up. What does the planet consist of water wise? I know the most of the planet. What is it? 80%.
80.
I know most of the planet is water.
Let's say at least 2/3. At least 2/3.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. And China, they
71%.
And China, they have this dam.
And when they built this dam to block off some of the ocean, they said it tilted the Earth off its axis by so much percentage. To give you an example of how much water we have on this planet.
Yeah, it's actually listed at 71% of the Earth's surface is water covered, and the ocean holds about 96.5% of that 71%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Nightmare. There was your 90% number. There it was.
Okay.
Yep. Now I've got the odd news about the statement that a Mars-sized object hit Earth, and from that we got the moon. That result comes from a 1997 article by a group of scientists, and here's what they did. They came up with some assumptions, and they did some computer simulations. And there really was not a lot of fact from which they went. They guessed a lot. They did these computer simulations. They assumed that that's what happened, that an object struck the Earth. And because they assumed that, they got computer models that showed an object went off and could have become the moon. There's absolutely no proof that – there's no proof.
Is that what they everybody on, consider the Big Splash theory, and it was related to the Greek Selene, who was a Titan, which is where the goddess of the moon comes from?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'll believe some old legends before I'll believe this computer simulation article.
That's right.
I absolutely will. I mean, listen, old legends come from somewhere. But this computer simulation model, I'm going to try to call the lead scientist on this. I mean, I hope the gentleman's still alive. The article was published 21 years ago. But I'm going to call him, and I'm going to interview him. He might not like the interview. But I'm going to ask him, where on earth did this come from? And I can tell you, Wikipedia talks about this result, that a Mars-sized object hit the Earth, and from that came the moon. They talk about that like it is the absolute 100% truth when it came from assumptions in a computer model. And the assumptions started with an object hit the Earth. They started with what they wanted to prove. I mean, that's the worst kind of research. You don't do that.
Hey, Dr.
You
John.
Try to do yeah.
Dr. John, a good question for them would be, because now that we have all this technology to be able to look out way far into space, have they ever seen or recorded another planet or object in space that has hit another object and created another planet or moon?
Well,
that would be a good question to ask if they have proof of this. Has that happened anywhere else?
Well, I will answer your question as follows. We have evidence of that twice in our solar system, because both Saturn and Jupiter have rings around them. And those rings appear to be debris from asteroids, meteors, or potentially moons crashing and breaking up. And they have that debris, and that debris did not collect up as a planet. So there you go. And I guess the second thing, so I just wanted to share with you, number one, you better be careful when you read articles and it says, well, this is how it happened. Well, they don't know how it happened. This came from some a group of assumptions that some scientists made and got paid from the National Science Foundation to do this study, but nobody knows if it's true or not. The next one, based on the hollow moon theory, is, and I think I've got my information here, Apollo 12, in March 1970, they sent landing module. They crashed it into the surface of the moon, because what they wanted to do is they had some seismometers down there. They wanted to see what the earthquake, what the seismology results were. And to their surprise, the moon rung like a bell, like it was hollow. Okay, it surprised everybody. Now, I've seen, there's a video on sciencechannel.com. It's called NASA Secrets. And it has some of those scientists from back then saying, oh, it's because the moon is so dry that we would get that ringing effect. And so that's case closed. The moon is so dry, it rang like a bell. Well,
there goes my theory on Mila Polovich. Stopping the moon from hitting the Earth from the fifth element.
Okay. Well, I hate to tell those scientists, from 25 years ago to today, NASA is now studying how to mine the moon for water. The project is called the Lunar Flashlight and Resource Prospecting Mission, and it's targeted for 2017 and 2018 because there is so much water on the moon. This is from space.com, and this is a news story from the end of last year. So everyone wants to dismiss the fact that they say, oh, the moon rang like a bell because it's so dry. But now we're going up to the moon because there's so much water on it. So all you have to do, I think, for most conspiracy theories is to start looking in the literature, start looking in scientific publications, start looking online for credible sources, and you'll find out that people say one thing one day, and then they'll say something else a couple of years later, and then nobody wants to call, you know, wants to call them back on that. Like there've been a million people that have said the Earth was going to, you know, the doomsday theorists, and said, well, the Earth's going to be destroyed, and nobody ever follows up with them after their prediction's wrong. So one thing we're going to do on Conspiracy Theories 101 is we're going to investigate some of this. I'm going to call some of these people, and I'm going to find out what they have to say. And Papa Stro, you had volunteered that you'd hang out with me on this line of inquiry for a while and see what we can do. I'm going to probably get some unhappy people when I call them up and say, well, this is what you said. Now it's been proven wrong. So what do you think about that? Nobody does a lot of that. So, and by the way, Papa Stro, if you find out one day I don't show up for the show in 3 years, you better come down to Paul's Island and see if I'm still here. Okay.
Yeah, the astronauts are coming after you.
Some kind of astronauts, maybe some gentlemen in dark clothing and hats. Maybe this.
Well,
like
Eric,
that.
Eric, I give myself
Armstrong.
3 years. How about you? What?
Remember Armstrong? Remember that kid that went up to Armstrong and said he didn't believe he walked on the moon, and he like knocked him out. He punched him and knocked him out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I remember reading about that one. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I used to think that maybe everything was staged, and now I think I'm not sure. We'll have to talk about that more, maybe on another show, and see if we can take this conspiracy theory and turn it into true, false, or leave it as an urban legend. But I guess what I can say is right now about the hollow moon, NASA's explanation from 1970 doesn't hold water, no pun intended. There's lots of water on the moon. They're going to go find out how to get it. So that doesn't hold water. So right now, I'm going to leave.
Don't look into the light. Don't let Tommy Jones make you look into the light.
Okay. And Dr. Joan, let all your fans listening, the people listening, know that that moon rang for an hour when they did that test.
Rang like a bell, didn't it?
It rang like a bell for an hour from the seismometers that they had on the moon.
Well, that's what this article directly from NASA stated. But they said it was because the moon is so dry. Well, apparently the moon has enough water they want to mine it. I know that from several journal articles that I read, there are ice caps underneath the surface of the moon at the top and the bottom, kind of like ice caps that we have here. So,
well,
you know, who knows?
You know, everything.
You know,
everything has a sound. Sound, I mean, that doesn't surprise me about the bell ringing for the moon, because, I mean, sound, everything has sound. Even things that we can't see has sound. They've proven that, you know, wind has sound. Certain inanimate objects we can't see, like atoms, even have a certain sound. They can record it through equipment and all that. And so, I mean, sound, you get there's sound in everything, really, believe it or not.
Well, you're right.
Sounds we can't hear.
In terms of atoms, they vibrate. They vibrate,
right.
And the vibration causes sound. It might be too low for us to hear.
Right.
But, you know, but what I want to do on this show, on the conspiracy theories part, is I want to raise questions and I want to get answers. So, first of all, what I want to say is I want to thank my three guests tonight. This has been a blast. We've had a good time. We've opened up the door to some questions. We've talked about crazy, creepy animals that are not too creepy animals. They may be wonderful pets, right, Eric?
That's absolutely right. You know, you never know where you'll find a companion.
That's right.
That's right. Well put. You just laid that one out for us. And Nightmare, thank you for being with us.
I had to, because, you know, some people don't realize that, you know, it's just like you have service dogs and other animals. There are some people that have lizards and stuff that they use because it treats their anxiety. So you can actually have, you know, a 4.5-foot tegu and have it as a service animal if it's something that calms your anxiety down. So, you know, it's the possibilities are endless there.
That's great. Well, I believe that, and I believe animals can do that. Animals have a wonderful effect on people if the people want it to happen and if the animal wants it to happen. Am I correct? That's a two-way street.
Very much so.
Yep. Well, that's good. I'll remember next time I want to get a service lizard. I'll call you. Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm not being flippant. I mean, I think it's great.
I don't think they can match up with Myrtle. Myrtle pretty much rocks.
Yeah.
Myrtle rocks. Well, I'll tell you what. Now, Eric, when we do our investigation in the Jacksonville area, will you try to bring Myrtle so she can hang out with Papa Stroh?
Yeah, I'll either bring Myrtle or I can bring Tears, which is the newest Moreless crocodile.
Nice.
Oh, is that your new 5.5-foot crocodile?
No. Let's see. Tears is maybe 13 inches right now.
Oh, okay. Kind of a baby.
Just a baby, yep.
Aw.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that, and we'll see if we can't put together some type of an investigation. We're going to put the Cape Fear Lizard Man, we're going to put that entity in the conspiracy theory column until we can put him in one of the three boxes, which is true, false, or urban legend. And but anyway, I was saying, Nightmare, thanks for being with us on this inaugural exploration into conspiracy theories. As we talk more this year, can you join us some more and talk about some of your experiences along with us?
Anytime, Dr. John. It was a pleasure, you know, with Stroh and Eric there. I love being on your shows. Thank you so much.
Well, good. And please tell
Boogie. Good to hear from you, bro.
And tell Boogie that I said hello. And Papa Stroh,
sure
I'm sure I'm sure you want Boogie to hear from you too, right?
I'll tell him. I sure will.
All right. And last but not least, Papa Stroh, thanks for being here. It's great to have you with us on Comic-Con Stars and Conspiracy Theories 101. We've got a lot more to do. I'll look forward to seeing you this Saturday night in Kinston at the Salvation Army. You and the Barbarian, that should be a legendary match.
Looking forward to thank you so much. It's going to be a great time.
You're welcome. So everybody, thanks a lot for being with us. And we'll all get together soon. There's a lot of Comic-Cons and a lot of conspiracies. There's enough to go around. So, again, thanks a lot. I hope everybody had a great time. And we'll talk to you next week. I'll see you 9:30 on WCW Retro on Wednesday. I'll call in and say hello to Papa Stroh. And then 9 o'clock next Thursday at Comic-Con Stars and Conspiracy Theories 101. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great one. And I'll be talking to all of you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, man.